outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gene. The God Gene. The God Gene.
Well, did you survive the fires? My goodness.
It did. It was a little smoky, but it was sort of like, yeah.
It's been funny. I've been working with firefighters around here right now because we're trying to get some of them to share at this event. We're 1 year out from the mass shooting at Borderline a year ago and then the fires that flanked our town on two sides within 24 hours and all the chaos of that. So part of a community storytelling event for Friday night, and I'm supposed to get a fireman. And so I've been working with – it's hard to work with firemen when they're actually on call like 24 hours a day trying to put out these fires attacking.
Yeah, I'm glad that they were there.
Yeah, me too. And they got within, the fire got within 30 feet or 30 yards of the Reagan Library. And gee whiz, been crazy out here. The heat, the winds, the fire, just ridiculous.
It has been weird because I've been out here for, I think, almost 30 years. And it's like we've gone through a bunch of fires, but now it's like it's an annual event.
Well, and multiple times in the annual event. It's not event.
And you're just going like, what the heck? I mean, it's interesting to me because it's not like the Santa Anas are new.
No, they're not new. I think the 80-mile-an-hour Santa Anas are new. I think that's been the problem.
We've had those, but yeah, it sort of seems like, you know, friends call them the devil winds, and it's sort of like, okay, an arson watch. I just go like, how do these things get started as consistently as they do? I know the winds whip them way beyond what anyone can deal with.
Well, this one was started by a homeless encampment. It was a cold morning, and they lit a fire, and whether it was windy when they lit the fire or they didn't realize, I mean, they don't have TV, so I don't know it's going to be windy, but it blew out of that campfire and into the brush. And I saw a video of one in the news where it's actually going through a field of just with the 80-mile-an-hour winds, and the fire is going as fast as a car. I mean, there's just no way to stop that stuff. So,
and it don't rain here much.
Well,
we don't have green vegetation. Have dry brush.
Well, it never rains between April and November. I mean, it just doesn't. Never has in California. I mean, that's just the pattern where it's not global warming or anything. It's just normal.
It's called desert.
That's why they called it the Golden State. That was the best marketing ever. Let's take dried, ugly weeds and call it golden.
Nice.
And then we have the Golden State. And anyway, so anyway, I escaped. I went back to Ohio. Saw some friends of ours.
We were here. We got smoked out. I mean, I was in my office and there's just no way to seal up the sense of sitting in an ashtray because all of the fire was just blowing right. And I'm just going like, okay, I'm glad we don't have active flames, but it's like, wow, this is what it's like to be a smoker.
We had that for about a day and a half, and then it kind of the winds kind of went elsewhere. And so that was right before I left. I don't think we had any of that after I left, but yeah, went and saw Monica and Harvey and some of our old friends
in
Ohio time and celebrated a birthday party and hung out with some folks that wanted to chat with me. So
very fun.
It was very fun. Had a great time. Got back yesterday. So now I'm in, and probably shouldn't have run off with all the other stuff I've got to do now to get ready for Friday night. So anyway, it's kind of a crazy week, but got to be done. Don't even get a break. So I'm Wayne Jacobson.
I'm Brad Cummings.
And I want to welcome you to the God Journey again, number 700 and something or other. I forget what the numbers are, but they're getting there.
It's a lot of numbers.
It's a lot of numbers. It's a lot of crazy numbers.
A lot of talking. You learned anything in 700 episodes?
I think I've learned a ton, but I've shared most of it. I'm not gonna recap it. I was with somebody in Ohio this week, so I've listened to every podcast. Okay,
I'm not serious.
Sure. I'm not sure that's healthy.
Yeah.
Well, I'm pretty sure I have listened to every podcast, at least when they were made. I haven't gone back and re-listened to them. So people always say stuff like, "Hey, remember that podcast when you and Brad were talking about?"
And like, no, I don't. What? I don't have that. About? I don't have that size RAM in my brain.
Yeah, just go. It was 603. I remember exactly. I remember 666. That's about the only one I actually remember what we talked about. And there was a reason for that. So how have you been, Brad? It's been a while since you joined us on the podcast. So
I've been great.
Are you good? Anything about Canadian citizenship? You seem to be spending a lot of time in Canada.
No, but it is a great way to run away and write. And I've been having a lot of fun doing a novel that I've been captured by. So I'm sorry to have not been available, but I've been having fun pursuing that.
Well, I think it's also been time for some other voices to be on the podcast. So some of it's been that as well. We're doing both kind of things at the moment. We're seeing when Brad and I can get together, and we're also including some other voices. So And it was funny when I was back there, a lot of the young people are saying, man, I really enjoy Kyle. I really enjoy Kyle being on there. And the other, a lot of the women are, and moms are, I really enjoy Julie. And so, and that's awesome. Where's Brad been? Miss Brad. So it's been kind of wild keeping this whole thing happening, I guess.
Well, I think it's time for voices to grow and things to happen. It's all great.
Yeah. And I was hoping to get, I was hoping to do a little recording with Harvey. Harvey's got a great story. And I just love the way Harvey and Monica live their lives. Every time I go back there, their relationships have just expanded with people. There's often, there was a couple there that had lost their first child at birth.
Oh, wow.
Lived about 4 hours. No indication during the pregnancy at all that there was going, might be a problem, potential of a problem, nothing. Just born without lung development, or I think it was.
Wow.
And I put them in touch with Harvey and Monica. They lived 3 or 4 hours away from them, but I just put them in touch with them, and they pursued that relationship. They were there for the weekend. The first time I had a chance to meet them. And another couple, she said, this gal is funny. She said, I talked to you when your wife was in surgery. I'm like, what? You talked to me when my wife was in surgery? And she said, yeah, about 9 years ago. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, I don't know what the 9 year ago surgery was, because Sarah's have been like mine more recent. But it got back to, yeah, when Sarah had some surgery and I was alone in the waiting room and no one was there with me. And I remember the phone ringing. I thought, I'd be great just to talk to somebody, because I'm sitting here. It's like a 5 hour surgery. So I've been here quite a while. So I picked up the phone and she said, man, she was just, they were really going through it. And she said, I expected a secretary to answer. I expected, you know, and you answer the phone. And I'm always amazed by that. You call my phone and yes, I answer it. That's the way phones work, I guess. I haven't figured out how to get someone else to answer my phone.
You don't have peeps that do all that for you?
I don't. You know, I intentionally don't have peeps. That's why I spin things off. Instead, I don't want a staff. I have not been in a staff meeting. And that's interesting, because this whole Thousand Oaks Remembers thing that I've been a part of here in the community, I'm for the first time in a long time in regular committee steering meetings, planning activities, and I'm going, it's been 20 plus years since I've been in those kinds of meetings, and they end this week, and I'll be so glad when they're over. It's not my thing. When I'm with people, I want to be talking about life. I want to talk about their joys and hopes and dreams. And every day this week, when I was gone, I did a 4 mile walk in the morning, and often had someone with me to just talk through life and journey. And
that's some mileage, dude.
It is some mileage, but yeah, if I'm not working out on the road, I try and get 4 miles in. And 4 miles at 34 degrees, it's a bit nippy.
That probably has some dog year life, like maybe that's 7 miles or something like that.
Well, when I started out on a walk with a guy, I really was looking forward to talking to, but he got called back to the house. We got about half mile out, and then something went on. He had to go back, so I was hoping he'd come back and join me, but he didn't. And then and that seemed like forever. 4 miles at 32 degrees. That was cold. The other two, I was with someone and we got talking. And before we knew it, oh, we're at 2 miles. Time to turn around and head back the other way. And yeah, so that was pretty cool.
That's nice.
So what's on your thoughts these days, my friend?
Well, I look at what's going on in our little culture and you just go like, golly, how do you know truth anymore? When you look at how everything is spun, if I didn't have actual sources that were working on some of this stuff that's in the news cycle.
Oh, you mean media stuff?
You know, I'm just talking what's in our world today.
I thought you were talking about truth in the capital T sense.
No, I think it's hard out there when you just go like, my gosh, it's like we have competing narratives on the same facts that would say two totally different things happened on so many different things. And you're just going like, how does the average person know what's going on?
And do you think they're all genuinely, the people who are reporting this don't know the facts? Or is there always someone lying about the facts?
I don't know, because I would think it would be hard. For me, if I just assume the best about people, I don't know how people would get up and intentionally lie all the time.
The media people? You don't think they do?
I don't know that they get up and they actually know this other set of facts and they're going to go like, I am going to intentionally just mess with my conscience and I'm just going to absolutely abject lie to everyone all the time. I end up going like, I sometimes think they're doing that.
Well, how do we get to two opposing sets? It's one thing to say, okay, here are the facts and we interpret them differently. Just like the Trump phone call to the Ukraine guy. Okay, so it's either quid pro quo, it's an impeachable offense, it's a horrible thing, or yeah, it probably wasn't the best idea, and he probably said some things he shouldn't have said, but it doesn't rise to the level of impeaching somebody. Now, those are interpreting the same set of facts if you're looking at, say, a transcript of the phone call, for instance.
Right.
That's one thing. But when actually reporting two different sets of this is what happened here, that's somebody has to be fudging something. That's what I think.
I think a lot of what's going on is people aren't so much doing the fact finding like they used to. They're sharing their thoughts, their feelings, their opinions on things.
As facts.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Sure. And I just end up going like, wow, that actually is an internal bias that reporters used to try to check at the door, acknowledging that they might have their own bias. And they really sort of nobly pursued their profession with a sense of, I am going to work to not have that interjected. Just the facts, ma'am. And you're just going like, we don't have any of that happening anymore.
I don't know that's not any of it happening anymore. I have people that I would trust.
Yeah.
That when I read a story, yeah, I would say, okay, I think they're giving me the facts as they see them. I don't think they're fudging the facts. There are other people, and politicians would be of high note.
Yeah, I don't know that.
Who are saying, I'm willing to lie about anything. You just like the guy that's caught with his, secretary, or the secretary says she's having an affair with the pastor. The pastor's first thing is always to lie. Almost always. No one ever goes, oh gosh, you're right. I'm such a, yeah. No. So people lie to get out of tight spots all the time. And politicians are consummate liars. I think everybody knows that. Mark Twain's been joking about it for years.
I think it's not so much a total philosophical question, but I do just go like, gosh, when you're not in that situation and you don't know the fact pattern and you don't actually know the people who are supposedly reporting the fact pattern, I do end up going like, how is it that we actually have any confidence in what it is that we're being told and we know that that is the truth? There is so much agenda behind so much that's being communicated today. And it's being reported as though it's not an agenda. These are the facts. And you just go like, but right. Then there's another group that has a whole different set of facts and a whole different set of perspective on the same topic. And they're saying, this is the absolute truth. I'm just going like, wow.
Yeah, I think that's...
How do you actually, today in this world, how do you sort through all of that? Because it really can be confusing. I'm looking at a whole younger generation that's kind of just checking out, going like, we don't know what to think.
Yeah.
And we don't really trust any of these sources. I'm going like, gosh, we're not aware of the fruit that comes out of that choice yet.
No, and that to me, when I look at the future of America, that's what concerns me most. It's not that people see the world differently, and it's not that they have different points of view or even different agendas. It's that we don't have even the same set of facts to talk about anymore. Yeah. Because people get their media from very different sources. Most people don't get media. I'll dip a little in this pool over here from what the Fox is saying, and I'll dip a little over here and see what MSNBC is saying. And I'm taking a wider view of, I'm trying to hear from different sides, and I'm ascertaining what the agenda is behind those sides. Because even if people tell you they don't have an agenda, I never believe that's true. So what is their agenda? What is their hope? What are they supporting? What are they trying to promote? That becomes very clear. And I think if you take in a broader swath of media, you have a chance of maybe finding something in the middle here that's more true than less true. But to actually know this versus that, I just don't think we can with people that are trying to make money off clicks or viewers.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. My son, Jared, has been in Washington, D.C. And for the last year and a half, too, he has every day been getting mentored by a 40-year experienced journalist. And they get every single paper out there. And this guy knows all of the goods on all of the different agendas and who's funding those.
Right.
And why, and the task is, okay, can we find the actual fact pattern that all of this is being spun around so as to discern what might actually be the agreed upon set of real facts? Because most of what they're getting is punditry presented as journalism.
Right.
And it's agendas behind the money that supports it. It's for the audience that they're trying to serve. And so you just go like, wow, an array of perspective on the same things. And he's learning to kind of like see through all the noise and to be able to pull out just the essential things. And then it's like, can we reverse engineer what actually might be true given those same set of facts without all of the spin around them? And it's like I've been listening to him in that whole process, going, what an incredible education, one that he's having a chance. But then I was, you know, downstream going like, I'm not doing that. I don't have that guy that has that knowledge, who's mentoring me with that insight, and I don't have 25 papers, nor the time in the morning to do that. And I just go, so how do the rest of us downstream understand the bias with which we're being communicated to? And what do we do about it? When having real good information that's true is how you make great decisions, how do you make great decisions when you're not dealing with the things that you really do need to know? I mean, I Lord, apart from you, I don't know how to sort that stuff out. And if you don't have a growing relationship that is able to kind of lean from him and have a sense of a knower that kind of bears witness to what's going on, I think it's hard.
It's very hard, and it's even made worse by this thing they identify in all of our humanity, which is confirmation bias. When I hear a set of air-fingered, quote, facts that fit my bias, I believe those.
Right.
And then when I hear a different fact pattern or set of facts that don't confirm me, then I can label that fake news so I don't have to go down that road. And that is getting incredibly complicated. Hopefully, out of the chaos of this moment, and it's hard because all the funding for good journalism has kind of gone out the wayside, right? It's all about clicks and advertising. No, it's not. And nobody, I mean, it used to be for the major network. We only had three major networks in America. Right. For those of you that don't remember, long time ago, there
was... What's a network, Wade?
There were only three networks, and the news department was a loser. It was meant to financially lose because they were trying
to make money. They were doing a public service.
We're trying to do what's right here, a public service, and government kind of watchdog a little bit, not much, but there was kind of supposedly equal access and all those kinds of things. But it was an attempt not to make money off of news. Now, who is the news source that isn't making money via advertising and clickbait headlines?
There doesn't exist one.
And to me, that's one of the telling things. When I see a headline on Facebook, somebody's LinkedIn article, or I see it from somewhere, I read the headline and I go to the article, and the article has nothing to do with the headline, or it doesn't answer.
I just got punked.
Yeah. Then I note that news source. I'm not going back there because you've told me my eyes are more important to you than your truth to me.
You got to be running out of news sources.
Yes, I do.
But
I also know people. I also know people who are on the inside of things. So yeah. I do have conversations that are more at times illuminating.
That's where I'm going like, gosh, if I don't know the source, I don't know how to trust the source. And when just reading something, you're just going like, I don't know how I'm being manipulated. You can tell in the verbs they use.
Right.
I mean, you're just going like, wait a minute. You're using a lot of explosive terminology that doesn't seem like a neutral reporting of a fact. Right. It does seem as if you have an opinion to share that you're wanting to, influence me into agreement with.
Yeah.
And there's some really effective writers that can present those fact patterns the way they do that. And I'm just like, that's not evil and wrong. It's just when I don't know how to actually source the truth, it's hard to just go like, Lord, we're all shaped by this.
Yeah. There's that website we talked about a couple of years ago that was going to do that and did that with articles. It would take the New York Times or a Fox story and it would drill down to they'd take both of them and kind of, what's really, what can we come out of is really true? And what are the words people use that reflect bias, that reflect those things? And it was a real educational tool. I thought it was pretty cool. We talked about it. I went back and met the guy who was the editor of it. And then it turned out when I was asking the question about how is this funded, things got to be a little squirrely, and then it was funded by a guy that some kind of cult thing. I won't even get into it because I'll get sued, and the whole thing went away. But that was the only attempt I know of in the last 5 years where a media thing was actually, at least on the outside, trying to tell the truth. Now, whether they're actually doing it or not, I don't know. And why it went away, I don't know, because that story's not been told. But it was the funder of it was a multimillionaire that had some issues with all kinds of Me Too movement issues and other things. So the whole thing kind of vanished.
I'm looking downstream, just, kind of like with my little desire to go like, where is all of this headed? And when a society loses confidence and what is being told to them. What happens to that society? Because that's the growing trend that I'm seeing. And it's from all sources. It's not just left and right. There's like there's a growing number of people that are just going like, I'm tuning out because I don't really understand. I don't trust what I'm being told, and I'm tired of being jerked around only to find that someone's actively trying to manipulate me. And so like people are unplugging from that, and I'm going like, okay, that's not a right or a wrong. I just wonder what's going to happen when that tipping point. Is you have a bunch of people that just go like, I don't trust what you're saying anymore. That's not a good outcome.
No, Pew Research just did another polling on how deeply our level of polarization is happening in America right now. And it's, you know, we've been tracking it now 3 years, and this is the worst of all years. They just did one in October, came up with it. And it's not just that we see things differently. It's that I see another American human being who disagrees with me as an immoral, horrible person. That's the polarization they're measuring. It's not just, oh, we have Republicans and Democrats. Right. We've always had Republicans and Democrats.
Well, why do you think that as opposed to just seeing someone as having a different opinion, why are they progressively becoming a hated enemy? Because that's different.
Well, it is, but I think, the book I did that's coming out next week that Bob Arneta and I did, The Language of Healing for a Polarized Nation, we really talk about how the media and politicians both have a vested interest in ramping up our polarization. Uh-huh. I think they both do. And they're the ones with the microphones.
But when the bulk of people are going like, hey, I don't like this, how, I ask myself the question, don't know the answer. Okay, if you're not wanting to see that person with a difference as the enemy, why are you? Why are we choosing a greater polarization at the same time professing we don't like that?
Yeah, that's the conundrum, I think, for the American population. Because one study showed that 28% of Americans are driving the polarization.
Yeah, I get that.
And 72% are saying, "Hey, look, just because you're a Democrat or a Republican or whatever, I don't have to hate you. I can disagree with you,
I believe in the mass missing middle of reasonableness. Because the minute I look at you and I go like, "Well, that's just unreasonable," is the minute there's no real dialogue that will ever be productive if we're coming at different perspectives. You and I do not see things alike.
We see
alike on a lot of things that really do matter.
Right.
But then we see differently. And it's like, I don't know why we see differently, but we do. But it's not as if we can't have a conversation. I don't treat you as the enemy. You're not evil. You see it different.
No, I know it's not evil, but we've had very difficult conversations.
Oh, yeah.
Have been incredibly, I think, painful for both of us in the last. We didn't in the first 10, 12 years of our relationship, right? In the last 5 to 7, we've had things that if we get onto it, misunderstanding just ramps up horribly. I mean, you'll say you're thinking this, and I'm going, no, I'm not. That's not what I was meaning to say. So these things lead to a certain amount of tension relationally that have made it difficult.
Yeah, I think
I agree with you.
I think I'm actually asking the question, going, I don't look at Wayne and go, that's my enemy. So I don't give myself permission to just dismiss you and the way that you see things differently. I do ask the question, like, what is he seeing and why is he drawing that conclusion? Because I haven't lost respect for you. I haven't just thrown your opinion out of the side because you don't agree with me. Like, I'm looking for some self-reflective validation. It's like, no, I appreciate, and I have for the whole length of our friendship, I like that you see it differently than me, because then I actually get to see something from a different perspective and go, huh, what do I think about that? I think I'm a strong enough personality that it's like, oh no, if Wayne disagrees with me, I just have to follow along. No, I don't.
Yeah, I haven't felt that.
And I appreciate that you don't make me do that. And so I like the ongoing dialogue. There are some things that I think, honestly, we've got onto that I end up going like, gosh, I'm starting to feel like I'm the enemy of where you want this to go. I felt like that. And then I share that back and you go like, No, I don't mean that. And I take that at face value that no, you're not meaning to do that. And I'm just going like, okay, if we have the kind of history we do, and we have gone through, you know, if crisis leads to bonding, we're bonded. Okay, we've gone through stuff that you just go like, there's a capacity to endure. There's a depth of friendship that's I appreciate that I'm just going like, I don't want to lose that. But we can in this present milieu of what's going on, we can actually be pitted against each other on issues that we both really care about. And you're just going like, what is happening in the breakdown of our society? Because I see that happening systemically everywhere. And I go like, I think there's a spiritual dimension behind that. That is, you know, it's not just two human beings. I think there's actually a spiritual warfare that is trying to drive us unto combat. And you're just going like, wow, how do you help people not end up in those polarized, vicious camps that want to go to war?
And that's the great challenge. I think one of the things that we've talked about in this book is we've got to get to know people that are on the other side of us. We've got to have relationships with people who look differently, think differently, and then even hear our own words the way someone else would hear them.
Uh-huh.
Not just what I want to say, but you know how an African-American might hear something I'm saying about race. It's going to be very different than what I may actually be saying because uh-huh. where they come from, or if it's gender issues or homosexuality or all those kinds of things. And those have been the real challenges in our culture, right? To have those kinds of conversations across the lines of having a very common worldview that we held for 200 years as a country, where we didn't have to negotiate all those differences because just a lot of them were pushed to the side and hidden, and now they're out front. And now it's forcing us to have different conversations than many people want to have. They'd prefer it not to have the conversation, just have the culture the way I want the culture. And
I've got it. I'm asking a question I don't know the answer to. I think when you're in search of the truth and you're also trying to be conciliatory with people that disagree and they see it very differently. And it's not just a neutral, I see it differently. It's the, I got a history of my own that has shaped deep feelings and hurts. I'm just going like, I mean, just take the subject of race. Okay, if you haven't lived where you have been on the downside of that, it's really hard for you to understand how things are heard from someone that has. And you say, well, but that's not what I'm saying. And we're like, well, yeah, but they're hearing through the lens of the life that they had and the whole history that they have. So communication, one, is a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
Really being able to emotionally identify with that is another problem. And then the question is, okay, and still, how do I find out what actual truth, capital T, as God would see it, not through my subjective lens in my own experience that goes like, but I don't see it that way. And I don't know how you get free from your own subjective lens. You can become more aware and sensitive to someone else's position, but it's not exactly the easiest thing to shed your own stuff or even be fully aware of it. I mean, I just sort of feel like as I'm maturing, I'm becoming more aware of my capacity for bias. As I get educated in subjects, I become more aware of how other people can see and feel different. And I'm very intentional about diving into that, but it's still like incredibly problematic. And I don't really see the rest of our culture being intentional about trying to solve that thing.
Well, I'm hoping that the polarization that we're in will eventually drive people to do that. Because I think that people are tired of it.
Yeah.
So it's there. I mistrust people who aren't like me, who don't think like me. But I'm also not engaging them because in society, you can pretty much stick with your club, your clan, if you want to.
I think that's the problem that we have with our algorithm-defined engagements. You no longer even know who you're engaging with and who is seeing whatever it is that you're doing. If all you're doing is on some sort of, you know, cyberspace, that's what you're communicating.
Well, isn't the same thing been true forever on Sunday mornings? The way the quote-unquote church organizes itself in our society is we have all these clans that get together because they have a commonality of they like that worship music style, or they like hymns, or they like that teacher, or they like that doctrine. I mean, we have that same issue. Just forget race and forget, just white Christians don't engage each other very well beyond differences. We gravitate toward people that make me comfortable. And stepping outside those lines, I do think, is an intentional act. And maybe it seems, and historians always say this, it always takes crisis to change the course of history. History doesn't change because a lot of people get together and say, hey, you know what? We could do better than this. Let's try and do better than this.
Let's all just be reasonable.
Yeah, it's crisis. And maybe this polarization is that crisis. Most people, it takes a world war. It takes a, you know, outside persecution or whatever. And always with Christians, the same way. The more comfort level you have, the easier it is to stick with your own kind. And then when you're under persecution from an outside source, then it's just, oh my gosh, if you know the God I know, I don't care what hymns you like. I don't care what teacher you want to sit under. I just appreciate the fact that we're brothers and sisters. And I think that, for me, my being outside of a club that I can identify, whether it's a Sunday morning group or a denomination or even a magazine I write for regularly that has a certain theological bias, being out of all of that right now, I have been now for 20 years, I love it. I love the fact that one of my closest friends in town here is a Presbyterian pastor. I love that my relationship with Arnita, working on this book over the last year and a half, and doors that has opened to other people in the African-American community who now write me and I've visited and been friends with. It changes everything about the way I think about race in the world from what I would have thought 3 years ago. She changed all that. She changed knowing her and others that have been related to my life. It opens a wider door in my heart to be with folks that see it differently. Now, I'm still on that journey. One of the things that I love that Arnita says is we all operate in bias. We all do. It's not like, you know, I think I'm finally non-biased. No, we're all biased. The thing is not pretending you're not. It's finding where you are and learning to work around your bias, learning to manage it and let it change, whatever. But I don't ever have the assumption that I'm in a conversation or I'm in something and I am completely neutrally objective here. I
chuckle at the notion of an objective human.
That's why I love people who challenge me. I love being in conversations with people and I go, I don't know if I've ever heard that before. And I may not even like it initially, but I'm willing. And this, again, being growth minded is essential to, I think, what you and I are talking about. If we're going to find truth, we've got to be growth-minded. Once I think I own all truth, or I own the most important truth, or I am the standard of truth, so anybody disagree with me is an idiot or stupid,
I think that's when you're in trouble. That's when you get captured. I think you reach that spot short of the judgment seat of Christ and our transformation. I think you're making a big mistake.
Yeah.
Because I'm just going like, okay, guess what? None of us has actually been in full-on eternity until they are.
And then so, you don't get to come back and tell us about it. Only Jesus did. That's the only one.
You just go like, okay, so if that's the case, then wow, how do I really embrace that constant sense of, Lord, search me, try me, see if there be any wicked way in me, where Paul says, look, I don't even trust my capacity to judge myself. Right. It's like, you know, inviting that scrutiny, inviting that flashlight of God's to just go like, hey, were you aware of this? And it's like, no, I genuinely wasn't. But now I am, and now what do I do with that?
Right.
You know, I think if we can inspire that, then there's hope for sort of more meaningful dialogue that will actually allow us to grow. Because I end up going like, the minute I assume that someone that thinks differently than I do, the minute I cast them out of my own sort of self-protectiveness as the enemy, is the minute I don't think that dialogue remains productive.
That's why, to me, I think generosity, learning to live a life of generosity, is really at the heart of what it is to take the gospel into the world. It's not judging. Bob Prater talks about this. I love it. He said, I came to the realization one day that if I was a judge and my daughter committed a crime and she's brought to my courtroom to be judged, I would have to recuse myself because I can't judge my own daughter. I love her too much. And that love would not allow me to judge her. And he said, to realize to love the people I need to love in the world right now, I needed to recuse myself from judging. Which, in some ways, that's John 3:17, right? Even the Son of Man didn't come to judge. He came to love. He came to save. He came to rescue. And that whole, and he even says we actually judge ourselves by the way that we are going to act or respond. That's going to be a judgment. But that he wasn't going to do it. And as I'm learning to live in the world, one of the growing edges of my life is learning to live more generously in the world with people who are different than me.
I do have a question on that. And it's a nuance, not a disagreement. We're still having to make judgments about right and wrong, truth and error. And the idea of my playing the judge on someone else's life with some measure of like summary comment and finality, I like we're told in Scripture, don't do that. Right. And in terms of that kind of judgment, right. Don't do that. That's not your job. You're not qualified. And you know, even if you're doing it out of love and bias, I think we do need to be capable of, even with people we love, being able to kind of assess what's going on, recognize our profound subjectivity and our capacity for bias, but still wrestle in that tension of how do I love them and also seek the truth at the same time and in a helpful way, constructive way, as opposed to a destructive. Because if you love someone and you see them going, I mean, you see things in me you don't like in directions or people I'm hanging out with that you're not sure about, and you're not quiet about it, you will make comment.
Right.
I assume it's because you do care, not because you don't. If you don't, it's like you wouldn't say anything. So you're having to judge, you're seeking to understand, but you're not sitting there at the end of my life as the final arbiter, as the judge.
No, and I wouldn't even say, my only concern about some of the associations that you have and some of the things you've talked about is how it reflects on our relationship. I'm not interested in trying to get you to think like I think.
Okay.
Okay. From someone who's struggling with same-sex attraction. I think I have a sense of what truth is about that. I do. And I'm going to live my life around that truth as I see it, but I'm not going to make you do that. I'm not going to make you live around my truth. I'm going to let you, I hope in a relationship of generosity, you're going to come to discover the God I know, and discovering the God I know will allow you to have a different access point to truth than simply doing whatever feels best or right to me. And if you ask me, wait, what do you think about this? I'm going to be honest with you about it, but I'm not going to do anything to compel you to make the choice I want you to make. And judgment is not, I'm not going to judge whether you're right or wrong about what you want to do or believe or whatever. I'm just ascertaining, what does that do to our relationship if that's the road you go down? And it I see it as not as advantageous to mitigate the polarization in our culture as you do. And that then changes the nature of relationship. My relationships with people change based on choices they make. It does. I don't mean I cut them out of my life, but it changes the nature of the relationship. If I think they're doing things that I just don't want to have to face all the time. And I mean that like not so much you and I, because we get together. No, I'm thinking
on how someone's hearing this, I'm resisting the need to kind of say anything.
I'm thinking of an abusive personality. Okay.
Yeah, I'm hoping you're not.
No, I'm not saying. I'm clearly not saying that, which is why. But as we're down that road, I'm thinking, you know, how are you being generous and loving to someone who thinks differently than you? That's one thing. If that person is treating you in an abusive way, by trying to make you think like they think, or that you're a horrible person, until you admit that you're a horrible person, they're going to keep telling you what a horrible person you are. Those things affect relationships with people. But I don't see that as I'm judging you. I'm just saying, you know what? I don't want to be near that influence.
I'm not really looking at the extreme situation or the abusive situation. I'm looking at the fact that, okay, our culture wants to say, hey, don't judge me, man. And it's like there's a sense of going like, I don't, you know, like all judgment's wrong. And I'm going like, I don't think that's biblical. I don't think that's true. I think it's not even true of them. I think we make decisions about a lot of things all day, every day. And I need to make those wisely. And so I do have to have a capacity to, in the deciding factor of this or that, I have to make judgments all the time. I want it's like an explosive word. I mean, I don't even know if you know what I'm seeing because I'm looking at your face and it's responding.
Because I think loving and judging people, do I make judgments all day long about, yes, who I'm going to be with, how I'm going to live my life, where I'm choosing to get truth from? I don't sit and look at someone else's life and make judgments about them. I don't feel compelled to make a judgment about them.
No, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about our culture right now is sort of saying, hey, and just pushing off that sense that don't judge me. I'm free to do whatever I want. And I'm going like, I don't think that's the issue that I'm looking at. I'm not chasing people down saying, hey, stop that, stop that. I mean, I'm not playing policeman of anybody at this moment.
But I don't think our culture's that licentious. It doesn't just say, yeah, some people say, hey, just leave me alone. I'll do whatever I want. But culture doesn't say that.
No, I know.
There are restraints on behavior all the time.
I'm just looking at what is popularly being communicated more and more and more is you get this general perspective that, oh, you shouldn't judge. And I'm going like, I don't know how to live on this planet and not do that in the decision-making forms that you need to. And I would put the parameters about your life and what God's asked you to do in relationship to him and his understanding of truth that I will only have a subjective portion of.
I think that's why you wouldn't want to force it on everybody else. If you really hold truth loosely, saying, oh, this is the truth the best I see it, but I'm not willing to make you live there.
Uh-huh.
I'm not. And so I think there's a difference between what's real truth and what followers of Christ seek to follow, whatever, and how other people in a nation need to live who don't know the God I know. I think that's been the rub.
And I think the challenge is whenever you live in a society, there are decisions that are being made by the representatives of that society that are, in fact, making policy. And as an individual, if I didn't have some other government that was imposing what we're supposed to do on us, I would completely agree.
Yeah, but we're trying to find that sweet spot of where people in a nation who have very, very different views about sexuality and morality and about all kinds of things, how do we find in the public spaces a way to share that without one side having to win over the other?
I don't disagree, I think, but that's the challenge of what's not happening.
Try and negotiate through it. But there's reasons why it's not happening as cleanly as some might like it to.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.